Good evening. This is Margaret Friedenauer with KHNS News. Welcome to a special election feature. For the next 2 hours, we're going to bring you voices from the candidates up for election in the Haines and Skagway local elections. Voters head to the polls next Tuesday, October 1st, to vote for candidates. In Haines, there are 2 assembly seats up for election, 3 school board seats, and 1 proposition on the ballot. In Skagway, there is the mayor's seat, 2 assembly seats, and 1 school board seat open. In the next 2 hours, we'll bring you 2 segments. The first is a recording of the Haines Candidate Forum that took place Thursday, September 26th, with the candidates for Assembly and School Board. In the second half, we'll bring you individual interviews with the candidates for Skagway Assembly and Mayor. This audio is also posted on our website at khns.org, and we have a direct link to it on our KHNS News Facebook page. First up, we have the Haines Candidate Forum. The forum took place Thursday, September 26th at the Haines High School Open Area. It was sponsored by KHNS and moderated by myself and Tom Morfitt of the Chilkat Valley News. We asked prepared questions as well as questions submitted by the audience. For the first 45 minutes of the forum, candidates for the school board answered questions. There are a total of 3 seats open on the Haines School Board this year, 2 3-year terms and 1 2-year term. There are 4 certified candidates and 1 candidate running as a write-in for the seats. The candidates for school board that will appear on the ballot are Scott Dotridge, Artie Miller, Lisa Schwartz, and Sarah Swinton. Kim Larson is running as a write-in. At the forum, Tom Morfitt and I took turns asking questions of the candidates. The candidates each started with an introduction.
If you want to give an introduction and kind of why you're running and why people should vote for you.
My name is Scott Dotridge. I'm running because I do have a vested interest, I guess, in the school. I do have 2 sons that go there. I have run a successful small business in town. I've also got experience working on the Southeast Alaska State Fair Board. Came onto the board during the time when it was highly mismanaged, and we managed to garner the support of the community and kind of turn the fair around to on the track that it's on to today. I'm interested in running for the board because I believe in just giving to the community. I think there's some things that I hear more than see, I guess, that I'm interested to know how it works and just make my contribution where I can.
Thank you. Kim?
I'm Kim Larson, and I'm running for school board because I have a very vested interest in the school. I have 1 kid that graduated, and I have a kid going there now. Plus, I've had 78 kids that were enrolled in Haines High School run through my daycare. And so I'm vested more than just for my own needs, but for other community people in the community. I've been on lots of boards, and every board I've been on has to do with youth. And so I feel like I know the teachers, I know a lot of community people, and my big goal is to make sure we get the community more involved in the school district and also make sure that our kids are the number one priority. It doesn't stop in a classroom. It starts in the, you know, we got to go to the library, the food program, activities, social skills. The whole community aspect is what's important in making the school run good. Go ahead, Sarah.
Thanks, Kim.
Sarah?
I'm Sarah Swinton. I've been on the school board now for 11 years, which feels like eternity in the 11 years part, but it just seems like yesterday that I started. I, too, have a vested interest in the school. I have 4 kids. 3 still are in the district. I am very involved in what's going on here. I'd like to keep going in the right direction that we're headed right now. It's a very cohesive board and working well with administration and the teachers. I think that we still have to think of the children first. It's all about the kids. And I think that growing up in Haines is a great place to grow up, and our school has done a great job raising our kids, and they go out to college and they have a good foundation where they're going. And on top of that, I'm alumni from here, so if I can do it, then I think the rest of our kids can do it too. And so I just want to continue the job that I've been on, and yeah, that's about it.
Thanks, Sarah. Artie?
Hi, I'm Artie Miller, and I have a vested interest in education. I have no children in the school. My kids, my 2 stepsons, are going to be 30 and 27 this year. They did go to school here once many, many years ago before they were mine. so I haven't had experience as a Haynes parent. However, I've spent most of my life involved in education, and I believe that what I bring to the board is an understanding of education at the systemic level. I've been a teacher, I've been a principal, I've been a professor at university, a dean at a college. I've worked for the Alaska Department of Education in federal programs. I've worked in curriculum. I've just worked in a variety of areas, and I've been a student a lot. And throughout my career in education, my focus has always been on the whole child and meeting the needs of all children, not just academically, but socially, physically, emotionally, providing a secure learning environment where they can really thrive. So that's what I bring to the board, and have had a great year so far, and hope to continue to bring that knowledge and that interest to the board in helping to provide the best education we can.
Thanks, Artie. Lisa?
Hi, I'm Lisa Schwartz, and I want to run for the board because I see some areas in the school that I feel like could use some improvement, and I do have experience on boards. I kicked off the Hospice of Haynes. I started the home health care here that is still running, and I was on the Alaska-Washington Pain Initiative Board that's a national board. We also run a very successful small home business in an economy that's not been very great in Haynes, but and I do a lot of fundraising. It seems to be an area that I'm successful at. So I think that we have a great community here and we have a great school. And I do feel like Sarah mentioned that we're going in the right direction. And I just think that we need to prepare our children a little bit more for the outside world. I've heard from a lot of kids that have gone off to school that have a lot of struggle just with some of the basic English and math that they run into, and coming from a small community, of some of the social issues that they run into as well. So I think we have some areas we could look at.
Okay, thank you. First question, Tom, you want to go? Kim?
Yeah, we're going to skip over. So the first question doesn't always go to the same candidate. Kim Larson, as a school board member or potential member, how do you see your role as a leader in relation to the leadership of the school administration? What is the role of the board in terms of leadership of the district?
I think the school board works, we deal with the superintendent the most. I think we make the rule, you know, go over the rules, plan everything, and make sure that the superintendent is the one that is in charge. I don't agree it's our role to micromanage any of the teachers or anything like that. We set the rules, and we would hope that the teachers, the superintendent, everyone would follow the rules and the policies that we set forth as a board.
Thanks, Kim. Sarah Swinton, same question.
Yes, the school board oversees Michael. Michael is... you know, we direct Michael as to policies and, you know, during our board meetings and all that kind of stuff, we direct him on what areas that we would like things to be worked on. But that's where it kind of stops. Michael is the superintendent, and he oversees the principals and the teachers. And so we don't micromanage, you know, every little aspect that comes through. It has to go through a chain of command, and that is, you know, the teachers deal with the principals deal with the superintendent, and then if there's a big issue, it comes to the school board. But, there's no room for the school board to get into all the different aspects of the school and the teachers. That definitely needs to be done by the administration and superintendent.
Thank you, Sarah. Artie Miller?
What she said.
Okay, we'll take that.
The role of the board is to set policy that creates an environment where the staff and the students can do their jobs most effectively. So our role isn't to do the job of education. It's to create the policy environment that allows the educators to do their work effectively. The other key role the board can and should play is as a link between the school and the community. I would hope that if I were to be elected again, that that my phone would ring occasionally. And I would definitely like to hear from people if they have ideas for the school or things that come to their attention that perhaps the administration needs to know about. They might not be comfortable contacting the administration, but knowing full well that that would be the first thing I would do would be to get in touch with administration if an issue arose. So really, I see our role as twofold. One is we are a link with the community, between the community and the school administration. And certainly our primary role is policy and budgeting to help create the environment that lets the educators and students do their job.
Thank you, Artie Miller. Same question, Lisa Schwartz.
Well, those things have been said, but making policy and oversighting with the budget are the primary roles of the board, and it's a collaborative effort in helping everything run smoothly.
Great, thank you. Scott Doddridge.
Well, how do you add any of that, except perhaps in addition to those things? I think also it could be a creative group that can help give the superintendent some tools to work with that he can then guide his staff and the teachers as well. So a good sounding board a place for ideas for alternative things to come around, whether it's, if the budget is in a shortfall and we don't want to lose certain programs, things that we can work on as an alternative method to keep things in place without having to deal with the financial woes.
Great. Thank you, Scott Doddridge. Question goes back to Margaret.
Okay. Sarah Swinton, how can the school board best nurture and retain good teachers or help to do so?
Right now, we are very fortunate in Haynes School District. We have great teachers on all levels. I think that we have been fortunate in the screening process of job interviews that we get good applicants, and we have a lot of teachers that have been with the district for quite a few years. They, have a good foundation, have a good rapport with the kids, and so I think we just have to keep going in the direction of what's best for the kids, and we want the best teacher possible for each level. We have had turnover in different areas like the band program and things like that. I don't think that's necessarily the fault of the district, the administration, or anything like that. I think it's personal preference of what's best for the teacher. If they are leaving, it's for their personal reasons, and we have found that with the ones that have departed lately is they're seeking something else. It's not a problem with, collaboration or anything like that. We are a very cohesive district right now with the staff we have on, and it's great. We work well with they work well with the school board and the administration, and I think that's where we need to keep going and keep the staff strong and building towards the great education of our kids.
Thank you, Sarah Swinton. Artie Miller.
Teacher turnover, in my experience, has been a problem in particularly in rural schools and isolated schools, and as Sarah said, much of it has to do with personal lives more than with the working environment. One area that is problematic for teachers in a small school like this is that we really only have one second grade teacher, and so there isn't that kind of professional support built in as there is when you're in a school where there are three or four or five second grade teachers. One thing that has come to mind as a possibility here is something that I might recommend to the administration is a form of new teacher mentoring. And that can be done through regular meetings, professional development, assignment of a mentor teacher. There are a variety of ways that could be handled, and that might be helpful. But I don't think it will ever fully resolve the issue of the isolation and the professional loneliness of being the only teacher in your grade or your area. That's just systemic in a small school. And the other thing that I think would be really helpful is if we as a community could find ways to make our new teachers feel more a part of the community. I have no ideas about how we might do that, but I think it's often the isolation both socially and professionally, that causes us to lose our teachers.
Thank you, Artie Miller. Lisa Schwartz?
I think that I've actually heard personal accounts of new teachers in our community that have left, and they've cited needing more support. And you know, our teachers spend many, many hours here. They have very full plates, and I think any way we can support them and to try to retain our teachers, I think just starting by listening and trying to improve communication throughout the different disciplines within the school would be helpful.
Thank you, Lisa. Scott Dodridge?
Okay. I think I already hit on something with the mentoring program. Also, I feel that I don't know, because I haven't been in on a hiring committee, but if teachers knew kind of what they were getting into as far as being hired in a small community, I don't think it's any secret that you're kind of under the microscope when you're here in Haines, and it is a stressful kind of environment, or can be, excuse me, a stressful kind of environment if you're not used to that small-town environment. One of my sons lost what I consider two really good teachers 2 years in a row. Both were new to the school, so perhaps, you know, it could certainly be that they're going for moving for personal betterment, if you will, or furthering their careers, if you will. But at the same time, to me, it could be something of a support thing, you know, mentoring is a possibility, and or just laying it out. Okay, here's what you're getting into if you come to Haines.
Thank you, Scott Dodridge. Kim Larson.
Wow. You said it all. Yeah, I don't like being last. I think one of the things we can do when teachers do leave the district is stuff, get an exiting interview with them, ask them why are they leaving, what are the downfalls of the school, what can we do to help improve these areas, and also, you know, try to get them involved in the community more. You know, if you see a new teacher, go and greet them. Be happy, you know, make sure that they're happy in their situation they're in, and just make sure that they have the support from all the teachers, the principals, everybody in the school, just to make it a more happy place for everyone.
Okay, thank you, Kim Larson. I just wanted to remind the audience, we have paper and pencils in the back. If you have any questions for the school board, yay, thank you. Yeah. I'll let Tom ask this next question, and then we'll get to some of these.
The question I wanted to ask is, you know, every year we have graduation, and we take so much pride in sending off kids to college, and it seems like we hear back reports of different kids who do very well in Haines and then don't do so well after Haines. Does the district have any obligation, or do any of you feel there's any room for actually tracking kids like a year after high school to see if what we claim are success at graduation really becomes a success afterwards? And I'll give that first to Artie Miller.
I don't know what, if anything, the district has done by way of follow-up. Sarah will have a better handle on that. She's just dying to get her hands on the mic here. But the rest of us might make more sense if we did hear from her first, because she knows the history. Can I do that? I have been involved in districts that have done one-year follow-ups and five-year follow-ups where they could find graduates and subsequent-year follow-ups. And it is something we certainly could do if we're not already doing it. In a town like Haines, we probably know those kids. We probably know where they are. We probably know what they're doing. It would be easy to do follow-up and do some kind of tracking with them and see how things are going. If we have students who are struggling once they get out into university, I think we need to look at that. I don't know that is, in fact, the case. Again, I haven't been involved in the district long enough to have a feel for that, and I don't have kids that age that I would be hearing back from the 20-somethings about their experience once they leave here. I would be very interested in spearheading or finding out, helping develop that kind of a follow-up program, just to see how they're doing when they leave us here. My sense is that our kids are doing very well, and that sense comes from our standardized exam scores, our graduation rates, the way that our kids perform on state exams, all of these indicators are very positive, and they do compare our kids to kids from Anchorage and even from other parts of the U.S. So from where I'm sitting, it looks like they're doing well. It looks like they're graduating with what they need to carry on.
Okay. Thank you, Artie Miller. Lisa Schwartz.
So one of the efforts that I'm aware of that the school district has done in the past, my son graduated last year, and he's participated in coming in and listening to children that have been made a panel that have been graduates of the Haynes School District and that are currently in college. And that's been really, really helpful. It was helpful to him personally. And I think there's probably are some other efforts that are underway to track some of the how the students are doing. I'm just more aware of the personal stories that I hear. And, you know, I can give you an example of a student that graduated the year before last. She was a B student. She really struggled at college, and she went to a UAF system and in the college systems here in Alaska. So I think it's difficult for our children in a small town going to larger areas, and I think we can prepare them a little better.
Thank you, Lisa. Scott Doddridge?
Perhaps I don't understand the question fully, but if struggling, you know, doing well in high school and then not performing well in college isn't necessarily an academic thing. Sometimes it's just a taste of freedom. I think there's a lot of kids that go to school and it's like, hey, it's party time. And, you know, that's how life works. And so they might stumble and trip, and if they've got the good support, they may well pick themselves back up later and realize, like, oh, wow, this is the track I want to be on. And as far as what we can do to monitor AfterWise, I'm curious to hear Sarah's answer there. I don't have any ideas off the top of my head, but certainly because we do live in a small community, it is a lot more trackable than, say, where I grew up, where there was 300-plus kids graduating from a class.
Thanks, Scott Doddridge. I think the reports, without naming individuals, you know, are that, you know, we graduate students that do well here, and they get in a competitive academic situation, perhaps without a lot of home support coming from home, away from home, obviously a part of it. Is there any, does the school, part of my question is, does the school have an obligation, do you feel the school has an obligation to at least check in and see if 80% of the people starting college actually finish college? You know, to actually, you know, rather than just saying, well, we have a 90% graduation rate, actually see what the success rate is in 5 years of those graduates.
Sure. Well, I think the obligation is just part of the, we're turning well-rounded students out into the world. So that's where the obligation lies. It's not like, you know, we're not being graded ourselves on whether they graduate college because of, you know, sometimes there's the choice of maybe I should have taken some time off before I went to college. You know, how many people in this room maybe went to college, got their degree, graduated, and then like, geez, now what do I do? I didn't really want to take that, but I was already on that course of action. And
okay, thanks, Scott. Kim Larson, same question.
Okay, I know as my son graduated in 2009 that they do surveys. They do it. My Lindsay Moore got a hold of a lot of the kids that graduated. She had it up on the webpage. She did it on Facebook. And I made sure that my son called, you know, took the survey. And I know that, I don't know for sure what the school board has done with that, but I know they do. My son participated in a survey that was done for the school on how he has, his grades have not been as good at school. But I, as Scott said, I don't think it has anything to do with the school district. But I think the school is at least trying to put it out there for these kids, you know, what can we do better to help the kids that are coming up?
So. Great. Thanks, Kim. And Sarah.
Yes, we do have a program in there. Lindsay Moore did start it, and it is tracking. I mean, I even responded, and I graduated eons ago. And so it does track the college students. It asks them what their problems are, what they could do better at Haynes High to ready them for the college world. And like everybody else said, it's not necessarily how we put them out there coming through high school. It's A lot of kids have never left Haines. A lot of kids have never been in a big city or a big university. You go from a class of 20 average to a class of, oh my gosh, there's a gazillion people here and nobody really knows me. I'm out here by myself. I've never been away from home. I'm homesick. It's a whole different environment. But we do have the feelers out there. The responses are being tracked as to the percentage, and I'm not sure how far. I think Lindsay's targeting more the last 5 to 10 years, not the last 20.
40?
Shut up, Kim. Long time ago years. But, yeah, it is out there, and we are using that information.
Okay. Thank you, Sarah Swinton. You're listening to a forum with candidates for the Haines School Board on KHNS. The forum was recorded Thursday, September 26th. We're about halfway through our question and answer forum with school board candidates Scott Dottridge, Kim Larson, Sarah Swinton, Artie Miller, and Lisa Schwartz. Thanks for joining us for this special election coverage from KHNS News. Now let's return to the forum. Okay, we have about 15 minutes left, and we have some questions from the audience. First one goes to Lisa Schwartz. Yes, we're at Lisa, right? This is to the entire panel. If you were to hear there are some serious morale concerns among staff, what would you do as a school board member, I assume? Lisa Schwartz?
Yes, I would believe that our first action would be to discuss it with Michael Byers and the school board and to try to start brainstorming some ideas about addressing that and through policy.
Thank you, Lisa. Scott Dottridge.
Yeah, that's kind of how the chain of command works, if you will. And, you know, again, you can ask Michael, but you can also maybe give Michael some ideas of, you know, things that he might, or find out what his thoughts are, and then possibly give him some ideas, whether it's teacher surveys or, you know, the mentoring program or something along that lines.
Kim Larson.
That's a hard one because you have to go through the chain of command as usual, but I know there are problems in the school, and it's hard to say what you would do because you want to help these people to make them more happy at the job they're doing and everything like that, but as a board, we can only do so much. And then, I don't know, there's got to be a way that we can get that information to us because it might be a problem with the superintendent that teacher or someone is having. And as a board, that if you can't get through the superintendent, the one you're having a problem with, there's got to be other options for them to get through and talk to the people that maybe can help it in some way. So I don't know the answer on that one, but as a person that is know there is some stuff going on, that it's kind of sad that they have to go that route. Maybe there is some ways to go other routes to make sure everybody keeps happy. Because if the teachers aren't happy, the kids aren't happy. If the kids aren't happy, the parents aren't happy. It just goes down the line. So,
thank you, Kim Larson. Sarah Swinton.
Actually, the teacher first would probably have to go to their presiding principal. If they're having a problem in the high school, they go to Michelle Byer. If it's in elementary, they go to Cheryl. And then from there, if they're not feeling like they're getting resolved, they can bring it up with Michael Byer. And, you know, we are the last to hear, but that doesn't mean that the teacher cannot notify a board member. At any time, anybody can call us with their concerns, and, you know, we're free to talk. It's, you know, so they could notify any of us, and then I could take the information they gave me and talk to Mr. Byer and say, hey, we really have a problem, or to Cheryl or whatever. It doesn't have to be that they can't communicate with us at any time. I mean, we are here for the community. We are here for the students and the teachers. And so if a problem does arise, I would hope that they would feel free to talk to us or, you know, the administration.
Thank you, Sarah. Artie Miller?
Lots of good ideas already have come up. One of the things that we as a board do is evaluate, direct, and supervise and guide the superintendent. And if there is an issue that's not being resolved effectively, one of the things we can do as a board is to make that one of the goals for the superintendent for the coming year. And as part of the review process that we do with him annually. So it's really important that we know when there are issues that aren't being resolved, because we can then talk about them with the administration and formally make that a goal. as part of the evaluation process. It's good to keep us informed, that's for sure.
Thank you, Artie. Lisa Schwartz.
I already answered that question.
Sorry about that.
Do it again.
Okay, we have a question from the audience. Ideas that each candidate has to stop bullying. I think are we back to you, Scott?
I guess so.
Okay. Ideas you have to stop bullying in the school. That's from the audience.
Okay. Well, I believe right now there's the PBIS, can't quite remember the acronym, that's in place. And essentially that's about enforcing positive behavior, which is definitely the way to go. It kind of breaks it into a three-tier program. Most kids, it's the bell-shaped curve, if you will, and most kids fall under the bell where they want to cooperate. They want to be part of the social network. And there's a little towards the outskirts, a group that they need a little more intervention, and then there's your extreme cases. Honestly, I don't have the answers for how to prevent bullying. There's certainly a lot of information out there to work with, and I think the PBIS programs being endorsed seems almost nationwide, and so kind of can learn more about that and work with that.
Thanks, Scott Doddridge. Kim Larson, how do you stop bullying in school?
Well, my first thing is zero tolerance for bullying. I think the school needs to be the safest place for the kids. They might have a good place at home. They need to make sure when they come into our doors that they're safe. There's zero tolerance for bullying in any public place, I think. And, you know, maybe the ones three strikes you're out, you know, on these, you know, give them a warning, and then you just got to set guidelines for them, and if they keep doing it, then we need to move on and zero tolerance. I just say zero tolerance for bullying whatsoever. It's not, you know, they're involved in sports in the high school. They don't play sports, you know, because I know it's bad in the elementary school. It's bad in the high school. There's different ways, but if they're bullying their own schoolmates, they're not showing a good example for our school.
Great. Thanks, Kim Larson. Sarah Swinton, same question. How do you stop bullying in the schools?
Well, like Scott said, we have instituted the PBIS, and this is our second year of doing it, and it has had a great showing so far. There are different guidelines out there for the elementary and for the high school, and you do have the, you know, first offense, second, third. And so the kids are really getting into that. The teachers have done some hilarious skits, and then they have announcements going through the school, and it's just really a different way to approach it instead of just, you know, I don't know, brass tacks. It's more open and friendly for the kids. We have definitely had a problem in Haynes with bullying. I'm not going to lie about that. It's been going on for forever. I don't think you can have a school that doesn't have any bullying, but we want to get it to a minimum for sure. And I do like this new PBIS. There have been other programs that the school has partaken in on different bullying situations over the years that I've been on the school board, and it's just a constant. Every year, you know, we address it, and the last couple of years, thankfully, we haven't had any situations come before the board of severe bullying. So it's still an issue, but I think we're getting somewhere.
Thank you, Sarah Swinton. Artie Miller. Preventing bullying in the school.
It's a really complex and difficult issue. And if we could come up with how to prevent bullying in the schools, we could all retire as millionaires. It's something that we've grappled with my entire time in public education, and I'll age myself here. I started teaching in 1974, and it was a problem then in small schools. I'm sure it is in large schools too, but I don't have experience there, only in small schools. The thing that seems to be working well in the school right now is the consistency across the system with the PBIS approach to behavior intervention. And the combination of very strict guidelines with enforcement for students who commit infractions of what looks to me like basic courtesy. The whole program is built on a model of basic courtesy. And that set of clear guidelines that everyone knows, every teacher, every paraprofessional, every support staff, every student, everyone is on the same page here. And that combined with the positive elements of really honoring friending, good behavior, helpfulness, that combination does seem to be working. It will take time, but I think that we'll see a real positive effect. The other thing that's critical in bullying is that we can't tolerate it in the community. If you see it on the play field, if you see it in the grocery store, step up and say something.
Thank you, Artie Miller. Lisa Schwartz.
So I think of bullying as one of the cultural issues in the school. And I am aware of a number of incidents in the last few years, one where one of the children left the community. I think we do have a significant problem in our community and in our school with bullying. I think it is less than it has been in the past. I think that it's an awareness issue that each adult in the school and other students as well need to be aware of what bullying is and intervene right then and there. So, and I've seen firsthand issues have been brought up to some of the adults in the community and in the school community and not be dealt with. And so, I mean, I don't want to rain on anybody's parade, but I am just going to put it out there like I have seen it and have heard it. And that it starts with awareness and education of what bullying is and a plan. I do like the present program that's in place. It's not been here in place for a long time, but I think that it's bringing positiveness into the school, which is really important. And I think we need to empower the other kids that aren't being bullied, that's witnessing this, but that are too frightened to stand up to the bully, you know, to say that this is not acceptable behavior. So helping kids get those skills, those communication skills to intervene.
Great. Thank you, Lisa Schwartz. Last question. In the event that you were God and you could fix or address a single problem at the district right now, and this is besides funding or enrollment, we ask you not to say, I would have more students in the school or more money. Something besides that, what would you address and how would you address it? And Kim Larson, whatever your pet peeve is at the district, that is the opportunity for you to voice that.
I don't really have any pet peeves of the district. My big concern is I want to get the community more involved in the kids in the town. I want to make sure that parents, teachers, the community, everybody is involved in our school. It's a public school. The more people that are involved in the decision makings, the more people that are involved in the policies and everything that show up to these meetings. I want that. I want the school board to make sure that we let out there as much as we can how important it is for the community to raise these kids. And just because we have votes on the school board, it'd be nice to hear other people's opinion and give us ideas on where to go from and how to voice our opinion on things.
Great. Thanks, Kim Larson.
And I'm not God.
Sarah Swinton, you're God. What would you fix?
I'm not God either, and I don't know what I'd seriously fix. You take away the funding, you take away the enrollment. I mean, in a perfect world, we'd have a lot more students, a lot more money. But I think the school's been going in the right direction of offering classes that are not actually in a classroom setting. Having our independent learning center has been key. We have different classes that are offered for the kids that are going to college and they want to branch out into their field they want to, you know, study. Those that aren't interested in something like Spanish, we have people taking German and French and Japanese, and it's just, it is very beneficial for a small school to have that capability to add extra things to the kids. It keeps the kids in school longer. It keeps them engaged because they're taking new topics that they're very interested in. And so we're not just catering to the ones that are going to a four-year school. We're catering to the ones that are going to trade schools or just starting life. And so I want to keep going with the Independent Learning Center and catering to every child.
Great. Thank you, Sarah Swinton. Artie Miller, if you could, what would you change or fix?
Sarah just answered the question for me. I think we're right on track in so many arenas, and the recent awards that the school has gotten are evidence of that, and the fact that the environment is improved from what it was a few years ago. Those things are evidence of that. Again, the challenges of the small school are making sure that the number one challenge, I think, of the small school is to make sure that there's enough variability and enough variety in options and elective courses and allow students to pursue their personal interests. I know that we have kids that get all of their required courses done well before they're finished with their high school career, and so they're left with time. And we need to make sure that they have ways to use that time wisely, whether it's things like the mining course that we offered last year, that those kids are prepared to go to work in the mine now. They can go the day they leave high school. They're ready to go to work in the mines. Or whether it's kids who are going on to post-secondary education. Or, as Sarah said, if it's just kids who have a personal interest in something, maybe they want to learn more about geography or geology or anthropology or history or whatever, literature, we don't have the capability on our in-house staff to meet all of those needs. Also, the remedial end, kids that need to take grade 10 math again and they just can't quite figure out how to fit it into their schedule. The Independent Learning Center allows for that as well. So the greater variability, variety we can provide, the better we're going to meet the needs of every kid in the school.
Great. Thank you, Artie Miller. Lisa Schwartz.
So I guess if I could move mountains and water, I'd want to see, in addition to having many more programs available for children, to have programs in place that could bring up our kids that are really on the fringes. These aren't the kids that get to participate in a lot of activities because they don't have the kind of support that some of our children have. You know, they're not the kids that are going on the Venture Scout trips. They're not the kids that are sometimes in even sports. So I guess that if I could, move mountains and water, I would want to be able to have some additional programs in place for them. And we have a gorgeous new school still, but I would just open the space up so our kids can have more indoor space and more physical activity and ability to move around in a space and just continue to teach our kids to be healthy and to eat healthy food and have more of a teaching of healthy lifestyle along with the rest of the education.
Great. Thank you, Lisa Schwartz. Scott Doddridge.
Well, I think standardized test scores and that thing type of thing, you know, we're very strong on that. For the most part, you know, we're all individuals, and so we're not standardized tests or standardized people. And so if we can develop more programs that lean towards the individual, and in some ways I think we've already done this. Last year I know my son who was in fifth grade, in one class they had a big diversity of kids in there as far as where they were in math, and the kids who were advanced were bored to tears because they were basically told to read while the teacher was helping out the more remedial kids. This year now, some of the kids are in sixth grade math, some are in seventh, and some are in eighth. And I think that's fantastic. And we need to really come up with creative approaches. It's, I agree with Kim, like with the zero tolerance for bullying, but we're not back in the day. Like when we were kids, I mean, zero tolerance for bullying was real easy. I mean, because you could put the fear of God in kids. You can't do that anymore. Yeah. So we need to, and I don't know what the answer is, but I do think that there's some creative approaches that we can take, certainly that educators or psychologists, people who actually study these things, we can borrow from them and get the right approach for teaching our kids on an individual level so they can foster and grow.
Great. Thank you, Scott Doddridge. And, okay, so that was our last question. Just introduce you guys again, Scott Doddridge, Kim Larson, Sarah Swinton, Artie Miller, Lisa Schwartz. You get to choose three of them on the ballot next Tuesday. And we're going to take a quick break and come back with the assembly candidates. And thank you all for coming very much.
You have been listening to the Haynes Candidate Forum recorded on Thursday, September 26, when the candidates for school board met in front of an audience at the Haynes High School open area to answer questions. You just heard candidates for school board Scott Doddridge, Kim Larson, Sarah Swinton, Artie Miller, and Lisa Schwartz. Next up, we have the forum session with the candidates for Haynes Borough Assembly. We asked prepared questions as well as questions submitted by the audience. There are two seats open on the Haynes Assembly this year, and the ballot for the Assembly seats could be a little confusing. Two candidates filed to run as certified candidates. That was George Campbell and Rob Miller. But Miller has since said he is withdrawn from the race, although he announced his intention after the ballots went to the printers, so his name will still appear. Also, after the official filing period closed, two candidates filed to run as write-ins, Mario Benassi and Diane Lapham. Our forum took place with Campbell, Benassi, and Lapham. At the forum, Tom Morfitt and I took turns asking questions of the candidates. The candidates each started with an introduction.
Starting off, I already introduced you guys. Do you each want to answer real quick why you're running and why people should vote for you? Mario Benassi.
Well, I think that we've got a lot of big issues and questions coming up for our borough, and I feel that I have special skills maybe for dealing with the kind of things we're going to be facing in the future. And that's why I threw my hat in the ring, and I feel that I'll bring a new perspective to the borough assembly. In fact, I'm sure that I will.
Okay, great. Thanks, Mario Benassi. George Campbell.
See if I can get this right. I'm running, I guess, basically because one too many times I talked to either an assembly member or the mayor and asking them why something was or wasn't, and they looked at me and they said, well, why don't you run? And at one point it's like, okay, I'll put my money where my mouth is. And we're back in town full time. My wife's finally was able to move up in November so that, you know, we're here all the time. I've got time on my hands a little bit because with the transition back up to here, I'm not working construction full time like I was. And there's a lot of things I've been, I'm just going to say, dissatisfied with the way that that our government's been acting. And not necessarily any one thing or one particular individual, but it's like maybe if I got in there and there's some a different perspective than what's on the assembly, maybe that'll make a difference.
Thank you, George. Diana Lapham.
I've lived in Haynes for 25 years. I've seen the ebb and flow of this community from when the mill was in production and there were year-round economy, jobs, children in the schools, and to where we are now, where we don't have a year-round economy. I am pro-development. I believe we can have a year-round thriving economy and not risk the environment. That's one thing that I have a real problem with, because in this day and age, anything is workable. It just takes a little hard work. And my husband passed away 2 years ago, and I am ready to meet the challenge of the hard work. It's something that I have always had an interest in, and oddly enough, as Pete was going through his issues, I was finding my away time by reading the packets. So I've got about 4 years worth of reading the borough assembly packets under my belt, and it was for nothing more than just for my own sanity. But at any rate, my husband was also on the assembly, so I am not a stranger to conflict. I'm not a stranger to a difference of opinion. And I feel that I can bring to the assembly a broad and open mind, which I think any assembly needs. And I'm not afraid of the hard work.
Thank you, Diana Lapham. Okay, first question goes to George Campbell. If you're elected to the assembly, one of your first big decisions is going to be hiring a new manager. So what kind of traits, what are you going to look for in a new manager?
I think one of the first things I want to see is I'd like to see a thorough background check so that we have a clue of what we really have, and I want to see a manager that can make a decision. Right, wrong, or otherwise, at least if they've made a decision, you can step forward. There's been times it seems like our decisions that have come out of our administration have taken a long time. So that would be one of the very, very first thing. I would want to see a long history of creative creative budgeting and being able to figure out that, oh, geez, this is going to cost us $10,000 this year, but if we wait 3 years, it's going to cost us $70,000. So, oh, let's do it this year. And sometimes, example I would like to use is the Chilcat Center roof. We've known for I don't know how many years in this community that the Chilcat Center had a roof leak. And at one point, that roof leak probably could have gotten fixed for about $12,000. Well, we just spent, I can't remember what the final dollar figure was, and I'm so glad it got fixed. But between the time it started leaking and now, there's thousands and thousands of dollars of electronics and other stuff that have been destroyed. So I'd want to see somebody that can understand a budget and look long-term, not just what this year. You know, we're deferred maintenance to me is something that has been happening, and through the work of a lot of people, when I'm sitting in our room right now, our buildings are the best they've ever been in the borough, and they keep getting improved. So those are some things I'd like to see from the manager, and I'd also like to see somebody that demands excellence in their employees. And that's, you know, it's much like our school. We just heard from the school board. We have a very small school as far as staff, number of teachers and stuff. And in one of my conversations with Michael Beyer, our superintendent, he said that we have to have excellence. We're so small, we cannot afford to have mediocrity. And that's what I would want in a manager.
Thank you, George Campbell. Diana Lapham, same question.
I, too, think that we need a manager that is going to make some good decisions, hard line decisions, and someone who works well with the assembly, motivated, works well with the employees because they are working under the manager. And I believe if your leadership is such that you have an open door policy and your employees can come to you at any time with whatever problems they might have, following the chain of command, of course. But I think it's real important. I think the manager, in my mind, is going to have to be very well-rounded.
Thank you, Diana. Mario Benassi.
I'd say all of that I agree with. And I think that the other thing that I would say is that we want someone who's vested in our community. It would be best if we looked within our community for a manager first, if we can find someone who has the qualities. I think first and foremost, you need leadership. You need that person to actually be able to, man the helm. And without clear leadership in an individual, you really can't do that job correctly. That would be probably the first and foremost in a manager is his ability to lead. And then also making sure that we do have someone who has a good background in management. You know, it's a big job, and their PR skills are incredibly important, especially dealing with all the employees of the borough.
Thank you, Mario Benassi. Next question goes to Diana. Right, this is an audience question. In terms of government being able to meet the community's needs, as you see the community's needs, do you think the future is bright, hazy, or dim for local government? I'll repeat that because there's a lot to it. In terms of the local government being able to meet the community's needs, as you see as you perceive those needs to be, do you think the future is bright, hazy, or dim for local government?
I think for local government, it's going to be very exciting. We have a lot of things that are coming to our attention, a lot of things on the table, and a lot of things coming down the road. And I think it's going to be extremely exciting. And I hope to be able to bring to the assembly a balanced decision-making process. I cannot guarantee that any one certain project is going to fly. It takes the six of us to make that decision. But I'm excited about what's coming down the road. And I would really like to be a part of it.
Thank you, Diana Lapham. The question goes to Mario Benassi. And again, in terms of being able to meet the community's needs as you see them, do you believe the future is bright, hazy, or dim for local government?
I think it's bright. I mean, I think that we're meeting the needs of our community right now. I mean, you know, I'm sure that there are areas in which we need work, of course, but I think overall, I think our school And really that's what the borough was established for in the very beginning, was to run the school and to make sure that we had that taken care of. I think we've got a great school, and I think we have an incredible community here. I think, you know, when you work with people who are of the quality of the people that live in Haines, I think that it's very easy to you know, get things done. So I think, yeah, the future is bright. I don't believe that we have a serious economic issue. I mean, I think that the issues are something we can work on, and we can augment, and we can work within the, you know, current structure to make things better.
Thank you, Mario Benassi, and finally George Campbell. In terms of being able to meet the community's needs as you see them, George, do you feel the future is bright, hazy, or dim for local government?
I'm actually going to have to say that in a lot of ways they're very bright, but then I'm going to preface and say our needs are actually very, very small in our community. Our wants sometimes get a lot larger, and we have a lot of wants, and I think a lot of our wants are not going to get met, and that's just that's the way I see, due to the fact of grant funding is going to be down from both federal and state level here in the coming future. I haven't heard the oil going way back up, so I know that and all of my friends at the state are telling me capital budgets are just going away. So, but our needs, I mean, take a look around our community here. Look what's happened just in the last 2 or 3 years. The road, look at all the new blacktop we've got. Look at the water systems that are getting, you know, have been repaired. And I see a lot of things happening that are really good. We've got some very good people in place. So our basic needs, I think, are going to be are well taken care of if we can continue the staffing like we've had. And it seems like the new hires we get recently are very, very competent. And if we keep that up, it's really bright.
Thank you, George Campbell.
Just a reminder to bring up your questions, audience, if you want to ask want us to ask anything. Okay, a little background on this one. For one, the Public Safety Commission hasn't been able to hold a quorum for its last 3 or 4 meetings. And recently, in the last several meetings, the Planning Commission has brought forth several recommendations to the Assembly, many of which were not passed by the Assembly or followed by their recommendations. So my question is, does the Assembly show appropriate deference to advisory committees? And we start with Mario again, I think. Mario Benassi.
Yeah, I do. I think that they consider the advisory committees, you know, appropriately. And, you know, it's not always clear. The answers are not always clear. It's, you know, things are complicated. And so it may take a few meetings to actually come to an answer on a lot of these issues. I can't speak to this one in particular because I haven't been at the current recent borough assembly meeting. So, but I think in the meetings that I've attended, I see that they are acting on committee decisions.
Okay, thank you, Mario Benassi. George Campbell.
I'm glad I had a little time to think about that. I've been at the last couple of meetings. I did miss one while I was up north hunting, but the reason that we have committees and we have a separate body that makes the final decision is so that we can, you know, part of the reason to have a committee is to have lots of different ideas. And as we all know, as a community, a lot of times a small group of people can go sit down and have coffee and come up with a really good reason for doing whatever. And as soon as they break out and they go and talk to somebody else, then all of a sudden the obvious gets explained and they go, ooh, maybe we need to change our idea. And that's what I've seen at the borough meetings recently is that the committees have been bringing some good stuff and actually they've been complimented on it, but there might be something about it that didn't work. And so that's why a few of the things that the Planning Commission has been sent back, because there were some issues that weren't necessarily understood by the Planning Commission, or some issues that there was a pretty solid reason why it didn't work. And so I think that the borough takes it very seriously what the committees do. And I'm let me use the MAP committee for the heliskiing as an example. That was a committee that took a lot of fire from the public just for the way it was created, even though that committee didn't decide how it was created. They were just the people nice enough to show up and be the committee. But yet the borough, when they listened to the committee, then they listened to the audience again and gave the audience, you know, and the community another opportunity to speak. They did some modification, but they did definitely defer to the committee on most of the stuff. So I think they do a very good job.
Okay, thank you, George Campbell. Diana Lapham?
I, too, have been to the last couple assembly meetings, and I agree wholeheartedly with George. It's refreshing to know that once you're on the borough assembly, that you're not looked upon as having all the answers, because you don't. And relying on the committees and the different factions that help make this borough operate is you can't trade that off. It's very important to the decision-making process of the borough assembly. And knowing that they did refer back to the planning and zoning, it's nice to know that we have that as our catch. We can always, if we're not sure, the borough assembly is not sure on anything, they can always send it back to committee and have it explained to them further.
Great. Thank you, Diana Lapham.
May I interject one other thing?
No. Sure, George.
And just to expand on Diane, it's not only the committees that the borough assembly listens to, it's also the public. I mean, they do take what the public has to say. So, thank you.
Thank you, George Campbell. Back to you, George. We've had some recent assembly meetings with agendas that have stretched to 6 pages. We had a recent assembly meeting that had to be held over 2 nights. I believe it was 5 or 6 hour length total. How can the borough best expedite its meetings and its business, or does it need to? Is everything fine?
This is a non-food area, no tomatoes. I'm very much a believer that the borough assembly meetings should be a business meeting. Most of the information that by the time something gets to the assembly and gets to the floor, there should be an awful lot of research, including reading the packet. We have an assembly member sitting here, and I bet you if we asked her, she probably spends 5, 6, 7 hours reading the packet, and then she probably goes through and researches what she read to, you know, just to double check stuff. And I know that the employees, just because of the things that I do and the time I have, I know there's employees that go and research stuff and make sure that there's more stuff in the packet. So if you haven't read a packet, you really owe it to yourself. And so there's a couple of things that I see that happen. And I'll just say this publicly. Our meetings open up, and one of the first things is a public comment period for we can talk about anything we want. You know, we, the public, can stand up, and we can say that we don't like the weather in Haines, Alaska, or we can stand up and say, you know, fix the potholes in the road. Well, I honestly believe, and I've seen meetings where that's a 20-minute ordeal. You know, maybe that shouldn't be in the meeting. Maybe that should be drop it at the end of the meeting if you want to do that. But at the beginning of the meeting, the first thing that our poor assembly members have been listening to is our gripes about stuff that we could have written an email, a letter, made a phone call to Connie, and, you know, put it on there and had it on as an agenda item. There's other things that come up. Recently, there was an ATV issue. And it was essentially a local neighborhood issue. You know, you typically have a young kid doing something that the people around him don't like, and so they wanted something done about this. It really wasn't something I believe that should have been at the assembly level. There could have been other things, and it didn't take that long, but it was a 15-20 minute issue for a meeting, and then people, you know, blah blah blah, things happen. So I think sometimes there needs to be an opportunity for the, you know, the agenda to be shortened and just say, you know, it's not the appropriate place.
Thanks, George. Diana Lapham, the question is, what can the borough do to expedite meetings or its business, or does it need to, or are things fine?
I honestly think, because I don't have hands-on experience in sitting at the borough assembly, I'm only there as an onlooker, as a student, as maybe somebody who needs to stand up and say something on behalf of a certain subject. I am not sitting in the seat of decision making. And at this point in time, because of my inexperience in that, I would say they don't need to do anything. The public comment period, from what I've seen at the Borough Assembly meetings, is extremely important. It's important to the person coming to that meeting and getting up and making their public comment, making themselves heard face-to-face with their assembly member. The rest of it, it's a matter of what is on the agenda, what topics are being addressed on the agenda. Some are contentious. Some take a little extra time. There's a lot of research. None of it is easy. It's extremely difficult to sit in that seat and have people thinking you have all the answers. I think they're doing a fine job the way they're doing it.
Great. Thank you, Diana Lapham. Mario Benassi, the question is, how can the borough best expedite meetings or borough business, or is everything fine, status quo?
I think you can't expedite the public comment. I mean, I'm not about, and I would never suggest limiting public comment on any issue. You have to be open to the public and their concerns. And I think, expediting these meetings, things take what they take. You have to hash it out and work out the details, and it's a collaborative process. You've got to get everyone involved. You've got to hear from everyone. And so I don't think there's short-circuiting that. You've got to actually go through the process, and it takes time.
Thank you, Mario Benassi.
You're listening to a forum with candidates for the Haines Assembly on KHNS. The forum was recorded Thursday, September 26th. We're about halfway through our question and answer forum with Assembly candidates George Campbell, Mario Benassi, and Diana Lapham. Thanks for joining us for this special election coverage from KHNS News. Let's now return to the forum.
Question from the audience. What steps do you see that would most improve the economy of Haines? That question, start with Diana Lapham.
Oh, what steps? Gosh, we've heard this a lot. From what I know, I have the tourism department is, we're one of the best small towns in America. I think, is a direct result from our tourism department. We need to get the information. We need to get our reputation of being anti-business, not developing, done away with. We need to court small businesses. And I'm just throwing this out there because it's an idea. If we had a community grant program in order to help a small business get a foothold, whether that be 2 years of not having to pay sales tax, we should try to help and develop the talent that's in Haines, and I know there's a lot of it, to start promoting our own economy within our community.
All right. Thank you, Diana Lapham. Mario Benassi, what steps do you see that would most improve the economy of Haines?
First, we've had an economy here for thousands of years. And in fact, at one time, there were over 10,000 Tlingits that lived in this area. And it's all been based on fish. You can't talk about economy here without talking about fish. And so I agree, definitely, tourism is key. The Scheinberg Report, which was just issued here lately, $1 billion a year in Southeast Alaska's economy is brought on fish alone. There's only a $2 billion economy in Southeast Alaska, and one of those billions is fish. Tourism isn't even factored in. So tourism is actually an ancillary of fish because people come here not to see development. They don't come here to see trains or, industry. I'll put it that way. They come here to see eagles, bears, fish. It's all a factor of fish. So I think working on the economy is augmenting what we do with the, let me coin a phrase here, the economic ecosystem with which we live. And that is, we can diversify tourism. We can bring more people in here. We can work to our strengths, which is we're unique. We were just featured in a magazine that says, Executive Travel said we're one of the best small towns in America. You know why we're the best small town in America? One of them is because we're incredibly unique. We have a beautiful environment, and people are willing to come from the ends of the earth to see this place. I think that we need to work within that. And anything, I'm not against development. I'm for fish, because fish is our base. That's where our economy has been surviving for all this time. So we have to work within that. So we've got to look at things through the lens of the salmon. What's good for the salmon is good for the people and our economy.
Thank you, Mario Bonassi. George Campbell, what steps do you see that would most improve the economy of Haines?
All the steps. There is no one major step that we're going to be able to do. And I've looked around for years. I've been trying to move back for a number of years. I've been living in Juneau, and it's little things. And I got to use some of what everybody said before. One of the things we need is when a business thinks about Haines, Alaska, and they Google Haines, Alaska, they can't have the first 25 out of the first 25 things that come up. We can't have 12 of them be a Chilkat Valley News article that is the communities against this or the communities arguing for that. Those kind of conflicts, the continued newspapers, and then they start looking and researching, oh, well, these really did happen. That is not something a large business or a well-structured business is going to invest in, as a community that's full of arguing, unless, of course, they're an attorney. And then they might show up. Our fisheries, you know, Mr. Bonassi talks about fisheries, and I agree. Fisheries are very, very important to our community. But for the last 5 years, I've been specializing in wetland restoration and fish stream restoration. So I had a fisherman here recently tell me that you can't rebuild a fish stream. And I actually had to look at him and say, you know, you're completely wrong. I can walk you to a couple of fish streams I've worked in where there was absolutely nothing there. I had a hangar right next to one of these streams, and we used to go walk in it, and we'd be in our tennis shoes, and we could walk across it most of the year. And when we got done the next year, you literally didn't want to walk downwind of the stream because of the number of salmon that were rotting in there from the, you know, after spawning. It was pretty incredible. So we can develop things. We can make things work and still have our fishery. So we can't use that as a stumbling block. The having a corridor that we can drive down without breaking axles in our vehicles. I live at 17 and a half mile, the old 18 mile Fossman corner. And I don't know how many of you have taken that corner in the middle of the winter time and slid off the corner or hit a bump and damaged their car, but I've already, in a year and a half I've been back, I've already had three cars, two of them with suspension issues, show up in my yard calling somebody because they had a broken vehicle.
Okay. So can you wrap that thought up, George?
All right. So anyway, so that's small steps.
Okay, thanks, George.
Sorry. You're out of sit in the center.
Okay, so what are the three, I guess, issues facing the borough that you would rank? And again, as we did with the school board, I ask you not to say, well, we just need some more money and everything will be fine. What you see is the top three challenges, and this is an audience question, three top issues or challenges facing that you would address this year. And the question, as written, was what are the top three important issues to address this year?
And that would be starting with Mario, I believe. Mario.
Okay, well, I think one of our top three issues has to be our sewage treatment plant. I think that that is really important. I think that... of course, we've got to have that infrastructure in place, and so that's got to be dealt with for sure. That would be on my top three for sure. And I think, you know, making sure that we've got funding to continue into the future, that we've got to make sure we secure that and know where that's coming from, have an idea of how we're going to continue providing services to the community. That should be, of course, very important. And also a plan for the future. I think without a plan, without some kind of vision for where we're headed as a community, there's no way of achieving any goals. You have to have a clear-cut plan. And I think that we've talked about plans, revitalization, we've talked about this and that and the other, but where are we with that? You know, I'd like to see the community involved in developing a really, you know, where do we want to see Haines in the future? Can we all collaborate together and come up with a vision of our community?
Great. Thank you, Mario Benassi, George Campbell. And the question as written was, what are the top three important issues to address this year?
Oh, this year.
Manager, manager, manager.
Thank you, George. Oh, yeah. Diana, what are the three top issues to address, I guess, maybe in the coming year?
I think first off, our infrastructure, the facilities. The public safety building is in dire need of something, whether it be a new building. And we're on the right track for that. I mean, there's a feasibility study out there. Our comprehensive plan, of which I'm in the fifth reading of that, it's not easy, but it's starting to make sense, is our vision for the future. And it addresses the tourism aspect. It addresses the fisheries aspect. It addresses pursuing the rail belt, all these things that seem new and unusual that are popping up in assembly meetings, the borough assembly is bound by the comprehensive plan to pursue them. And that's where our future is at. And I believe we're on track with it.
Thank you.
Oh, and you need two more. I'm sorry. You need two more, don't you? Yes,
you
do.
Well, that was quite a few, but
yeah, I kind of got off on track there myself. The definitely the public safety building and the highway. I have a 25 year plus vested interest in that highway. I was married to the DOT foreman for almost 20 years, so even though I don't have hands-on experience with government, through Pete I was able to see the workings of government. I'd like to see that highway repaired, brought up to standards. It needs it. I know it needs it. I believe, all know it needs it, and we can do it without ruining the fish or the eagles or anything up there. It takes a little extra work, but we can do it. The third would probably be, per the comprehensive plan, it says that Haines will sustain 3 cruise ships a week. I'd like to see 2 more cruise ships coming into this community.
Thank you, Diana. And Mario wanted to...
Yeah, I'd just like to talk about a couple of things that have been said here in terms of building fish streams, and we can do this without damaging salmon. The problem is it's an inexact science, and so far with fish, we've proven that we really don't have the ability to create salmon habitat very well.
I guess we were going to offer you that opportunity for, not as a rejoinder to what another candidate said, but as an opportunity to, if you hadn't finished your thought. But this is not a debate style format. Thank you. There's a kind of a continual question that arises on the size of government. We have grousing that there's, you know, jobs being added kind of here, there. The budget's too big. Is the borough's budget too big? Is it just the right size? Is it not enough to sustain our community's needs? And I've lost track again. George.
Oh, man, so pick on the businessman. If you can't afford to pay for the budget, if you can't meet your budget, it's too big. I want to say that we had to pay for part of the employees' salaries this year through our from our savings account, so we're spending more money than is coming in. So I would have to say that right now our budget's too big or our income is too low. So take your choice. We can raise taxes and get more income, or we can figure out a way to get a whole bunch more sales tax and businesses in here for property tax and raise. But so I would say at this point we're a little bit bloated. We need to cut our budget. We're going to have to cut our budget because right now we're spending more than we're taking in.
Thank you, George Campbell. Diana Lapham?
That's a tough question because I'm really not privy to the budget. If, in fact, what George has said is true, and I have no doubt that it's not, that it is true, I agree with him. If we are having to pay employees out of our savings account, then there's going to have to be some trimming, and I don't know where that trimming will be, you know, until if I'm fortunate enough to sit on the Borough Assembly. I mean, I have no idea where that trimming will be.
Okay, thank you, Diana Lapham. Mario Benassi?
Yeah, I have to concur on all accounts. I mean, if you don't have the money, you can't, you know, buy into something you can't afford to pay for. But on the other hand, I'm kind of perplexed a little bit. Isn't there a surplus in the budget? That's why there's a savings, and isn't that, you know, kind of there to? No.
Did you want to? That was your question. But
I'm set.
Okay. Going through some more audience questions. We have some more questions on committees, but we kind of asked one about that on ferries. This one, truth be told, is an audience question. Tom and I did not come up with it, but we're going to ask it. How would you characterize the borough's current relationship with the media, and should it change, or how? That's Diana Lapham. Please, starts.
I honestly don't know. I do not know. I have been to two borough assembly meetings, going as a student watching the dynamics on the board. I really don't know what the...
I could add something just if it would make it easier to say what should the borough, what should the relationship be if you were on the assembly too, that might be another addition to it.
You know, Margaret, and again, I go back to the two meetings that I've been to. From what I've seen, the interaction there between the paper and the radio and the borough, I think it's great. I think it's an open policy. I don't think the media is afraid to ask questions or interject or have their input said right then and there at the meeting. And, I mean, I don't see any problem there.
Okay. Thank you, Diana Lapham. Mario Benassi, same question, if you have an answer.
Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, to my thinking, you can't censor the media. And so what happens in the borough is public knowledge and should be disseminated as such.
Thank you, Mario. George Campbell, same question.
I think we should triple the tax for all newspapers. sorry about that. No. The last meeting, there was some discussion, and if you guys are following current events, you'll have heard about the issue of the employee evaluations, whether they should be public or not public. I run my own business. My employee evaluations are pretty easy. If you're not up to snuff, you go down the road pretty quick. And so if my employees are doing good, they get a bonus check. If they don't do very good, they usually go away. My lovely bride, however, she works in public office. You know, she's an employee for the state of Alaska, and she has a lot of personnel experience, and we had to sit down because I really agreed that all this stuff should be public. And she's like, no, no, no. And so I lean on her expertise, and because she's got lots of employees, she started explaining the ramifications and the reason things are private. Well, what I saw at last meeting was there was a discussion, and actually it was the borough assembly was discussing what the committee had discussed, and come to find out there were members of the local media, both the radio and the newspaper, at this committee meeting, and there was a joint discussion. It was not an argument, it was a discussion, and what I saw was some very, very professional workings amongst everybody, and so it's always going to be contentious because their job is to point out the mistakes and the problems of the borough. That is the media's job, is to point that out and to point out the great things that they do. And I think they've been doing that. So I think we're always going to have that. But I think professionally, they do a very, very good job working together.
Thanks, George Campbell. We have room, time for one more question. And the question is, the town has a number of social issues, problems, alcoholism being one. We have certain numbers of youths that never get beyond our community, maybe from broken families and whatnot. Does the borough have, and obviously the borough is very busy already, does the borough have any role in taking active or looking for active solutions for some of those issues that affect our day-to-day lives here, some of those social issues and places, you know, teen centers or shortening bar hours or lengthening library hours or other communities have done a number of things done different things. And we're starting with Mario.
Okay, yeah, I would say absolutely. Yeah, the borough definitely has a role to play. In terms of grant funding to Lynn Canal, you know, counseling, other agencies that might do work with these kinds of issues in the community. I feel like community problems are borough problems.
Thank you, Mario Benassi, George Campbell.
Fix the economy and a lot of things will go away. We've got a lot of people that don't work in the winter. They don't have a reason to get up in the morning and they're not tired when they get home at night. Those cause social problems. Read the research on domestic violence, on alcoholism. Employment is a huge deal with that. Fix that. It'll help. Does the borough have some responsibility there? Yes, they do. In fact, I think that if we look right now, the borough is supporting Lynn Canal Counseling and some other things. Are there more we can do? I don't know. We've got a tight budget, but it is a good thing for the community to work together. But there are a lot of things in place, and sometimes it's just a communication with people that need the help to find out that, hey, you know, Lynn Canal Community Players is doing a play. Why don't you come do that instead of go to the bar? So, yes, we do have some responsibility, but fix the economy. You know, get a good manager in there so that we can work on fixing the economy, and I think it'll all settle down.
Thank you, George Campbell and Diana Lapham.
Excuse me, not all, but it will help itself.
Thanks, George. Diana Lapham, what can we do, or should the borough, does the borough have an obligation? How can it address some of the town's social problems?
I have to agree with Mario on this. If the borough can be a steering in as far as providing grant money to these different organizations, then yes, by all means. There are professionals. I am not a professional in any way, shape, or form as far as helping with alcoholism or any of social things that are going on out there. There are professional people in place in our community, and that's where our talent lies, is these professionals. Let them do their job. But if the borough can help in as far as garnering grant money in order for their job to be a little easier, by all means. Much beyond that, I don't believe the borough needs to micromanage in other organizations.
Thank you, Diana Lapham. And that's about the end of it. I just wanted to remind the audience that they answered a lot more questions in this issue of the Chilkat Valley News that you can read. And remind the candidates that we actually had a lot more questions than we were able to get to. So people do have a lot of questions for you out there. Thank you all for coming. Thank you for participating. And thank you all for coming and participating. We're going to air this again on KHNS Saturday night at 8 p.m., and it'll also be on the website to listen to. And get out and vote Tuesday. You can also vote by absentee until then if you go into the borough offices if you're going to miss it Tuesday, or if you catch a moose Tuesday, George, like you mentioned.
But
yes.
Before you close this, could we each...
Do you want to take a moment for a
Well, can we each take a minute and just maybe give a quick rundown of who we are and what we are?
I didn't want to keep anybody here, but if you guys want
to...
We'll let Mario Benassi have a little closing statement.
All right. I got to say, fish. that's everything for our little community here. It's the economy. It's what brings tourism. It's so valuable. We need to protect our fish, and we need to look at every decision that we make in terms of big ones, how it's going to affect this precious, precious resource that we have here. It's our renewable resource. And the other thing that I would say is our children. This school is where, gosh, I put a lot of energy in this school, and I love this school. I think we've got something really good going here, and I want to see it continue.
Thank you, Mario Bonassi. George Campbell, closing remarks.
I just was going to introduce who I was. George Campbell, I've been attached to this community since we moved here in 1968. Spent 19 or 18 years living in Juneau when I, after married my wife, trying to figure out how to move back, and we just finally got back here full time, and we got looking at it, and we realized that for most of that time, I owned more property in Haines than I did in Juneau, and I paid more property tax in Haines than I did in Juneau. Don't ask me how I did that, but that's the way it was. And it's a community that has given me a lot in life. It was nice listening to the school board candidates, some of which I went to school with. And one of the things that came to mind, they were talking about college degrees. I'm one of the people that got scholarships, and I went to school. And although I went to school for one thing, I do part of that I do as my profession, but I've gone on to other things. And you know, I was one of the students that the vocation was very, very important for. And as I've grown up, when my father, I can remember it, in his last years of life, he asked me, he says, when I die, please get an ad in the newspaper, and I want it to say there's a lot of good people in the world, and most of them live in Haines. And that's why I'm back. So that's why I'm here.
Thank you, George Campbell. Diana Lapham.
As I said before, my name is Diana Lapham. I've lived here for 25 years. I was married to Pete Lapham. We were married almost 20 years. He was a DOT foreman. I've owned two businesses here in Haines. One was my travel company. The other one, I was co-owner with my late husband in the Haines Saw Shop. My daughter graduated from Haines High in 19... Yeah, it was a while ago. But nonetheless, she is a graduate of Haines High. This community has given me a lot, and I fell in love with it about 30 years ago when I was up here on a snow machine race. And I vowed that at some point in time in my life, I would return to Haines, and I did. And I have never been sorry, and I look to the future with this community. I want to give back.
Thank you, Diana Lapham. Thank you, everybody. Have a good night. You have been listening to the Haines Candidate Forum, recorded on Thursday, September 26, when the candidates for Haines Assembly met in front of an audience at the Haines High School open area to answer questions. You just heard candidates for Assembly George Campbell, Mario Bonassi, and Diana Lapham. That wraps up our coverage of the Haines election with our recorded candidate forum for Haines Assembly and school board seats. You can also find the candidates' answers to more questions in this week's issue of the Chilkat Valley News. Don't forget there's also a proposition question on the Haines ballot this year about whether to change language in the Haines Charter about individual rights and artificial entities. Now, we switch to the Skagway election. Skagway has seats for mayor, assembly, and school board open this year. Darren Belisle is running unopposed for re-election to the open school board seat. Mark Schaefer is running unopposed for the open mayor's seat. And four candidates, Tim Cochran, Spencer Morgan, Tyler Rose, and Christoph Duppy Takaro, are running for the two open assembly seats. Because of the busy visitor season, Skagway candidates were not able to join us for a community forum, but each of them took time to answer questions in individual interviews. They also answered a variety of questions in this week's issue of the Skagway News. First up, Mark Schaefer is the sole candidate for the mayor's seat, being vacated this year by Stan Selmer. Schaefer has served on the Assembly on and off for the past 6 years. He talked to us about some of the issues facing the Assembly in the next few years, how he sees the Assembly working together on those issues,
and why he decided now was the time for him to run as mayor.
You know, we're going to try to lead the table a little bit and take us in the right directions, go down the middle of the road. And there's a lot going on. We've obviously got a lot of issues and projects going on in the community. But, you know, yeah, the opportunity's here, and it's time to do it. I don't have any large agenda. It's to continue on the projects and the issues we've been working on as an assembly, like the Port Gateway Project. And we've got a multitude of capital projects going on. You know, Skagway's always got a lot of things going on capital projects-wise, like the Arts Pavilion. You know, public safety building planning is ongoing and has been for a long time. And, of course, we've been looking at getting a study done in West Creek to see what the potential is there for hydropower. It's an environmentally responsible thing to do as far as thinking about developing that. Very early stages, we need to see what the potential is. We do communicate with our northern neighbors, Whitehorse, and our southern neighbors, Haines. And we've got some issues with ship emissions that have been ongoing over the years, and we need to see if we can find solutions for that. Well, we've always got a lot of projects going on. The first phase of the boat harbor, I don't know how much I had to do with that necessarily, but as the assembly, the boat harbor, the clinic, we've got an awesome clinic now. That's been a big success. The gateway's been around for several years, and we really need to continue working on that. We've got money we have to spend. We also have an environmental issue from fugitive dust from the ore shed that needs to be dealt with and cleaned up. So I hope, you know, for that reason alone, we continue moving forward with this project. We need to accomplish something there. And the last few mayors have been working on the gateway project. We've got some money deadlines, obviously, as we've talked about in meetings recently. And so we've got to keep our eye on that. We're either going to get something done there or we're not going to get anything done. We're going to have quite a new table. It is what it is, but you certainly lose a lot of experience with some of the people we have at the table. And, you know, I'm not concerned about it, but it's going to be interesting. I suspect as mayor, I may see a lot more contact from the community. I know Mayor Selmer's awfully busy. And it's a challenge. It's a big task, and I'm excited to be potentially doing it soon.
That was Mark Schaefer. He's running unopposed for Skagway mayor this year. Next up are candidates for Skagway Assembly. We start with Tim Cochran. He's previously served on the Skagway Assembly. He took the last term off to spend with his family while his son was in his senior year of high school. But now he wants to return to the table.
I was on the Assembly from 2009 through 2012. I also served on the Planning and Zoning Commission. I was on the Ports and Harbors Committee for a few years. I've been on various committees, served on the Covered Arts Facility, Public Safety Building Committee. I grew up here, and I was gone for a period of about 23 years in the military and some civilian work in the lower 48, and I moved back 10 years ago in 2003, and I've been involved with the community ever since. One of my observations here is the western side of the port. We are negotiating with Ada and White Pass, but it's slow moving, and there's money from the voters of Skagway and bonding for $5 million on the dock, and the governor has appropriated $10 million, which is not a lot of money, but we're supposed to use that money in about 5 years, and we're still not focused on an absolute absolute decision is exactly what we're going to do down there, and I think that needs to be done and move forward because we're running out of time for funding. We have to start the funding all over, which, you know, if we have to, we have to. But, these projects can equate to a few more jobs, maybe not as many as if White Pass was operating year-round, but maybe the shoulder season can extend a little bit. Maybe we can see a few more jobs here in town for longer because, the school population rising a little bit, it's still dismal compared to, say, 30, 40 years ago where we had, we only have a quarter of the population that the school had back then. Being as seasonal as we are, we've taken quite a crunch on the economic scale in the wintertime. With the cruise ships that are coming in here in the summer and the power requirements, the cleaner fuel, the scrubbers that they're talking about, it would benefit the whole area if they could be plugged in. We just don't have the volumes of power available for even one ship to plug in. Those ships consume more power than one ship consumes more power than Skagway and Haines combined. So we would have to have some other means of a large hydro, a couple river run-of-the-river projects for hydro if we went hydro. There's talk of a possible LNG coming through here as shipment into Canada and having, an intertie between here and the Yukon that could transfer power both ways.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of coordinating and that effort that would need to be done. But also there's other, there's the public safety building. That's an issue that was one of the higher priorities from our comprehensive plan in 2009 with a lot of public input. Recycling program was high on the list. More jobs, housing has been an issue for years. And so there's several issues that are ongoing that still need to be addressed. I'd like to see something with the senior citizens. We need some more concessions there where senior citizens may a care facility of some sort of assisted living or, reduced cost housing. I think, through a little bit of, agreeing to disagree on certain items, we can always find middle ground and go for the best decision that's best for the town. I mean, I grew up here. I want it to be a safe community as it has been and an ideal place for families to settle here. I know we need something to generate more jobs and we need to focus on that.
That was Tim Cochran, candidate for Skagway Assembly. Next up is Spencer Morgan. He serves as chairman of the Skagway's Planning and Zoning Commission. He thinks that with that experience, he is ready to serve on the assembly.
Well, I'm running because we have a young family in town, and I've been a resident for about 14 years year-round, and I feel like this community has given me a lot, and it's time to give back to the community. Actually, I've been on the Planning and Zoning Commission for, I think it's going on about 3 years now, and most recently I was elected the chairman about 4 or 5 months ago, I think it is. So I've been chairing the planning and zoning for the last little bit. That's kind of one of the reasons I felt like it might be time for me to run is I've gotten a chance to get my feet wet sitting on the commission, and so I've gotten a better feel for how meetings are run. So I feel like it would be a smooth transition as far as meeting-wise goes. I feel there's definitely a need to brush up on everything else that the assembly encompasses. A little bit of experience working on the commission definitely helps. Obviously, the Tidelands lease is going to need to be addressed in the coming years. The Gateway project is a huge aspect of this town. I mean, we are very unique in the fact that we have road access and rail access into Canada, and also a port that doesn't freeze up year-round. So, you know, the basically our port is one of my top priorities. Also, one of the big projects coming up is we have on the horizon is the public municipal safety building, which would encompass the police departments and also the fire department. The fire department's facilities, I believe, were built in the 60s, and they've kind of outgrown those, and the police department is working out of a pretty small little building. That really is one of the top projects I see on the horizon. And I think the one thing that, you know, people may notice from the answers that were given to Skagway News is a lot of us have the same priorities. Obviously, the Gateway Project came up. The main thing is I think we all have common sense, and that's something you need to bring to the table to make a smooth transition. And, you know, those decisions can be based off your common sense. And if that's the case, I think even though there's a 50% turnover, we've all lived here long enough to know kind of what's going on in the city. Yeah, I think as time goes on, if I was elected, there'd be more issues. But the main thing for me is I really want to see more of a year-round economy. We have one of the highest unemployment rates in the wintertime and one of the lowest unemployment rates in the summertime for the state of Alaska. And I think what we need to do, and if the, you know, if the assembly can do anything, it would be to help bring that unemployment rate in the winter down. I think that goes around with, you know, the more jobs that you can create for a year-round economy, the more likely it is that you have young families to stay in town, which, you know, keeps kids in the school and thus helps with the funding of the school. So it kind of is a top-down approach with a year-round economy.
That was Spencer Morgan, candidate for Skagway Assembly. You're listening to our special local election coverage with candidates for Skagway office. We're about halfway through our interviews with Skagway Assembly candidates. Up next is Tyler Rose. He's a lifelong Alaskan and grew up in Skagway. He and his family just returned to Skagway to become year-round residents, and serving on the assembly is how he wants to serve the community.
Well, I just got married this January, and my wife and I have decided to make Skagway our year-round home. I was born up in Whitehorse and raised here till year-round till the fifth grade. And then my father got a job down in Juneau, and so we went down there. Continued to come up in the summers my whole life, so been a bit of a snowbird for a while. I've always had an interest in politics. You know, growing up, my dad was highly politically active, so I always had an interest, but never really stayed in one place, kind of going back and forth. And have taken an interest now, gonna be setting some roots here. Well, I mean, I think more overarching issues are creating a viable year-round economy. I mean, it's been a common phrase and one kind of near and dear to my heart because it's personal, of trying to keep young families, young people here year-round and grow the community in that fashion. And I think just looking for opportunities in that way. You know, some of those things, one of the options is the Gateway Project, you know, creating that. It's a kind of a hot-button issue. But also making year-round life, I mean, many people love it as it is. And I, like I said, I grew up here. But having kind of more opportunities, not only on the financial front, but more activities and things like that that would make staying here, you know, throughout the winter months, just kind of a better experience. Well, I've known, boy, all the assembly members for quite some time. I could probably, you know, go down and list when I met each of them. But, I mean, I think you have a good collection of folks. I mean, over the years, you really had great representation here in Skagway. The community has had, you know, really unparalleled growth since, you know, the, you know, 87, you know, roughly ballpark figures. But, you know, a lot of those projects are really important to the community. And I think having diverse minds and interactions, I think everyone can be worked with. The assembly's done a pretty good job working, and I would hope to contribute to that.
Okay.
We're not that Skagway, I mean, as an assembly member representing Skagway, that we're not isolated from the rest of the region. I mean, we definitely have common interests to work with all the surrounding communities, and that it's important to interact with the outside communities and not be, I mean, clearly we have to protect our interests, but also work cooperatively so that not only it benefits our citizens, but the entire region. Honestly, I still have a lot to learn on a lot of issues, you know, just to be frank, but I'm not someone who comes in and says, well, I know everything there is to know. There's a lot I can learn from assembly members and even from community members as you interact, and there's a lot of research that goes with that. I think access to the community is very important. You know, when you talk about the increased ferry service, or even the possibility of road construction. I mean, access is a big issue, and it's been a bit divisive throughout the region. I don't even say a bit. It's been divisive throughout the region. But I think what's important is that we do have overall access, whether it's road or ferry. I mean, we need to take a cautious look at whether you get into road construction in here. But at any rate, whether it is ferry or road, and you know, we do have to have access in and out of this community for a variety of reasons. The economy clearly is linked to all other issues in a variety of ways. Definitely, you know, we would like to secure the tourism economy within Skagway. I mean, it is our primary source, but also having alternatives and diversifying as best we can. I mean, it's definitely, you want to take care of what you have, but also look at options to improve what we have. It's kind of an interesting thing. The city motto talks about the past, present, and the future. You know, my family on my mom's side reaches back to the gold rush. You know, obviously I grew up and spent a lot of time here. You know, want to continue that legacy, if you will, into the future. So, I mean, I have been fortunate enough to have a variety of perspectives, you know, on this town. I've worked in a variety of different industries here, first in my parents' restaurant as a kid growing up through here, and then I worked as a shipping and receiving manager at some of the curio shops, had my own business briefly doing golf tours, and then with White Pass, which is, you know, the town's largest employer. But so I think I've had a lot of diverse experience, and it could, you know, I believe would be helpful on the assembly.
That was Tyler Rose, candidate for Skagway Assembly. Next up is Christoph DeCaro, also known as Duppy. He's lived in Skagway for 17 years and thinks serving on the assembly is how he can best be an active and concerned citizen.
Well, I think it's important for our community for people to step up. And, you know, I think it's everyone's civic duty to get involved in our community. And what better way to represent everyone's voice on our assembly? So I think that Gateway Project and the waterfront lease is huge. I think the renegotiation of the waterfront lease with White Pass is going to be huge. I think there's a lot of other issues on the table that are really important to the public. School funding. What else do we have? We have the public safety building. There's a lot of issues that the public needs to see that our government's working hard at, and the transparency between of those negotiations is crucial, voters. I mean, the public really needs to get involved in a sense of being active, of coming to these meetings and educating themselves on it. The public, they play a crucial role of electing an official to represent them. And those officials have to represent the public as well. There are times where, you know, things have to go in an executive session. You know, and I believe that that's a partial or a crucial part of the process, too. But most of that can be done in the public. I bring a lot of strengths, in my opinion. You know, being a year-round community member for the last 17 years is important to a lot of locals and, you know, a lot of local residents, for that matter. Being a coach of the last 6 years for school and for community, being a parent of a young child, I think those are important things that to me, and I think I value those pretty high, and I think those are going to strike a lot of voters as well. My experience in multi-million dollar hospitality industry gives me a lot of the financial ability to have oversight and to understand. You know, but above all, I think that I'm a concerned citizen who loves this community. And I think that's a crucial, important issue that a lot of people can associate with. Yeah, it's home, you know, and this is where we decided to raise our child. This is where we decided to, you know, start our life and the good life that we do have. And this is a big reason why I'm running for assembly. There's a lot of community jobs that are year-round here. People have to be active about getting them. For me, it hasn't been an issue, especially within with my skill set.
working in the hospitality industry has always given me year-round employment. Working for the municipality, especially in public safety, that gave me year-round employment. Growth and stimulus is important. Economics is important. But, you know, as we talk about the waterfront lease, not the waterfront lease, but the Gateway Project, that could tie in some jobs for Skagwegians, more year-round jobs for Skagwegians.
That was Duppy Takaro, candidate for Skagway Assembly. And that wraps it up for our special election coverage from KHNS News. We've been bringing you the voices of candidates for Haines and Skagway office. First, we heard from candidates for Haines School Board and Assembly, and then from Skagway candidates for Mayor and Assembly. This broadcast is also posted on our website at khns.org. Don't forget, Election Day is Tuesday, October 1st. In Skagway, the polls will open at 7 a.m. and close at 8 p.m., and the polls are located in the Assembly Chambers at City Hall. Skagway voters can also vote by absentee in person through 5 p.m. Monday. In Haines, polls open at 8 a.m. and are open until 8 p.m. In-town residents vote at the American Bald Eagle Foundation building. The polling place for the Haines Highway Precinct is the Klahini Valley Fire Department on Mosquito Lake Road. Haines voters can also vote by absentee in person at the Borough's Administration Building until 5 p.m. Monday. So don't forget to get out and vote. For KHNS News, this is Margaret Friednauer. Thanks for joining us this evening. You're listening to KHNS, Haines, Skagway, and Klukwan.